Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Molly and Haw, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
When you draft a quarterback in the first round and you trade up and get the guy, I completely understand the questions that are going to come, you know, each day, and just kind of wanting to know who's the guy going to be at this day or that day or this week or that week. And so I get that. And to answer your second question, I would say this. When you're the number two quarterback and in that situation that you're presenting to me, then yes, he would be the guy. But when you talk through this, that's where it's like, you know, these quarterbacks, all three guys, just because they're in that spot right now, we've explained, and I specifically have explained to each one of those guys, that you're doing everything you possibly can to be as competitive as possible and be the starting quarterback and the best quarterback you can be for the Bears. And so I'm taking a little bit of time here to say this, because I know that these questions could go on and on each and every day, but out of just politeness from me and respect, as we go here moving forward, I'm just gonna, like, I'll give you updates as we go as to how the guys are doing. But as far as the depth chart goes, this is where we're at, with Andy as the one, with Justin as the two, with Nick as the three.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We've got Tom Thayer in this morning. And Tom, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but the fact of the matter is that when you are talking about a starting quarterback for an NFL franchise, a rookie quarterback drafted, a trade-up draft pick, people want to know how he's doing. People want to know, is he going to start? I don't know how you stop that questioning. I don't know. You know, saying Andy Dalton's going to be the starter on day one, does that change anything in the way people get fired up for Justin Fields? I mean, my God, you saw him go to a Cubs game and get a standing ovation. And that's that is a drop in the bucket of the kind of attention that a rookie quarterback is going to get, especially in a town like Chicago, a football-crazy town.
Right. You know, at the beginning of the season, like I mentioned before, you have to have a pecking order. You right. have to have a depth chart. You have to have the guys that are going to get in the huddle to start 7-on-7, get in the huddle to start teamwork. There's a group of guys that come into that huddle that they know that they're first in line, and everybody is beatable. Everybody can get beat out of their job. The thing about it is, Molly – you've been at 500 Bears practices in your career, you know. So how often do you pay attention to how well the three technique defensive tackle is doing? How well do you pay attention to the right guard? Never. But because of every single drill that you go through once you put the team together, well, it's 1-on-1, 7-on-7, and teamwork, there is a right and the wrong of the performance of the quarterback. No one's recognizing what all the other guys are doing, because you're not going to – the left tackle's not going to miss his block and the defensive end's going to come and lay out the quarterback. It doesn't happen. But every single time you break the huddle in 7-on-7, every single play is a pass. Now, when you have the coaches going through the evaluation, writing down the play, knowing what they're scripting before the practice ever takes place, knowing the coverage that they're putting out there for the quarterback, now you know where the play is supposed to go. So these coaches, John DeFilippo and Bill Lazor and Matt Nagy and every one of these offensive coaches know the exact design of the specific play they're calling and whatever the drill is. And the quarterback's performance is very identifiable. So if you go out there and you hear Andy Dalton call the play, and it's a late read. It's a bad throw. It's not the right decision according to the coverage that you're seeing. Look, man, the decisions they're making for themselves, and it's the same thing with Justin Fields. And Matt says, he was saying it yesterday at the podium, look, I only speak one language. But when you talk about a quarterback speaking quarterback language, you can tell from the tempo of the way they say in the huddle, they know what they're saying.
Right.
And there's times where, because of some of the guys I played with, like Keith Van Horn and stuff, he was so experienced in the offense that we were playing with, if the quarterback didn't say the play right, he could correct him immediately.
Wow.
Oh, we can't run it. We got to have this tight end over on this side and stuff. So that's what these coaches are listening for when they're hearing the language come out of Justin's mouth. And if it's thinking, if it's, you know, he's got concern in the way he's saying it, he has a misunderstanding of making sure that he's got the right motion included to identify the coverage during the play. All these things that they're going to see and they're going to know. So I think it's a little bit easier for these coaches to see the right and the wrongs that the quarterbacks are committing. Now, if we're talking about Tevin Jenkins in 2 months, now you're going to have to go and talk to Juan Castillo, the offensive line coach, because he's the guy that knows the assignment and the exact configuration of how this offensive line is choreographed to block this certain protection or this run play, and you can tell if he's doing the right or wrong thing. I don't necessarily think you're going to go up to John DeFilippo or Lazor or Matt and say, hey, what did you think of the practice of Cody Whitehair today? Listen, that's not what their focus is. Their focus is the terminology that they gave the quarterback according to the drill that they're facing, and then how that quarterback performed. And so,
yeah, I understand that. I just think that if Matt Nagy believes that stating where the starting point is and where people are is going to stop the inquisition,
right, then never.
About who takes over when, and it's just never going to happen. And it's, you know, out of politeness and respect to him, all people want to know is what the quarterback's thinking, how the quarterback's doing. That's an unfair comment, maybe, but I'm just telling. I remember, you know, going back to Platteville, there'd be practices where, you know, when the offense and the defensive line square off, you would be over there and you'd be taking serious notes about not just who was winning battles, but who was even blocking against each other. Because then you could double back and talk to a guy about what it was like blocking this guy and how good is that guy and what do you think of this young kid. But you needed to know if they were going to square off at any point in practice. So that was a very important little bit of information. Nobody was just sitting there looking at the 7-on-7 drill, trying to figure out, oh my God, he threw one bomb and there was a pass to the flat that was definitely not accurate. No one cared about any of that because it wasn't the essential to how they were going to succeed as a team. Because the game has changed, I guess, is what I'm saying.
You're exactly right. The game has changed because when you were at Platteville and you were standing there and we were having the drill 9-on-7. Now it's 9 offensive players against 7 defensive players. Until Buddy Ryan used to bring up the safeties because they played an important role in run stopping. So you could get an identification of how well the offensive line is playing according to that drill, because that drill you're only running the ball. And it's called 9-on-7 because you're trying to keep the running lanes in between the tight end of the tackle. And so now if we're running a 45 fast trap and my assignment is to pull to my left and kick out Richard Dent. If Richard Dent comes and closes on me and blows me up, boom, you're not good enough.
Right.
Or if I sit there and I pull and trap Richard and I blow him up, okay, you know, Buddy Ryan's going to be yelling at Richard for that.
Right.
So those are the different intricacies of assignments that really you see in offensive line meetings. Because when you're in offense and defensive line meetings, you're watching every single one of those plays at least 10 times because each guy's going to be watched at least twice during the course of the breakdown of that play. That's not the same thing with quarterback.
Right.
You know, you hear them, right. You hear the language, they break the huddle. They got this play called. Okay, you know, during this play, we want to make sure they're playing a cover four because we know that once we put Darnell Mooney in motion, they're going to identify that it's cover four, and right now the quarterback has to know where he's going. It's not taking the snap of the ball and then going through the thinking process. Right. It's putting the guy in motion so you know where you're going to go with the ball. And the timing of the play and how efficiently it's run, that's part of the decision-making process too. Yeah, we brag a lot about Justin Fields and his athleticism because sometimes that's going to be a saving grace before he gets up to speed. However, the information, it's got to be digested and put into use when you the
can
ball
he run
is
the
snapped.
Play that's called correct. as they're practicing on a daily basis. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. The listener line is powered by BetQL. The Score listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit betql.com. We'll start with Tim. Tim's in Hampshire. Good morning, Tim.
Hey, good morning, Molly. Good morning, Tom. Hey, I think it's, in my opinion, it's completely irresponsible of Matt Nagy to be so definitive in the starter. I mean, what if, and I don't want to play what if too much.
But, Tim, listen to what Tom is saying, and I agree with what he's saying, which is it's a starting point. You know, you want to be, you got to have a depth chart so that the starting quarterback is Andy Dalton. And I believe Nagy even said when he named him, promises are made in the NFL and not always kept. He said something along those lines. I'm not saying that he's not going to start the season opener, but I do think you have to have a certain hierarchy, a top to bottom at the position.
Go ahead, Tim.
I get that, but I've also heard him say that no matter what happens, Andy's the starter. How could you say no matter what happens? What if Justin comes out, lights up the preseason? I mean, it's irresponsible. I know you probably did when you got Andy Dalton, you didn't think you were going to get Justin Fields in the draft. But, I mean, come on. You got to be more open. I understand the starting point, but he's been pretty definitive in another interview where he's saying, this is it. He's the guy. Now, I'd say maybe Tom can answer this. What if Justin is the guy, clearly the guy?
Well, you know,
it takes week three. Are you going to lose a locker room? I mean, you guys know who the best player is on the field.
You know, Tim, I your question is correct because, you know, how can you be so definitive about it? But I do think in the underlying message of every coach that I've ever talked about, it's only he's answering the question today, tomorrow, a month from now, 3 weeks into the season, it could be completely different. And that's why I'm saying you have to have that opening day depth chart. And from that moment on, everything is a competition at that second. You know, let's take Eddie Goldman, for example, who didn't show up for the mandatory minicamp. And they went and drafted Kyrus Tonga, a big nose guard from BYU. You know, so you still, even though Eddie Goldman didn't show up, just because of his track record, you probably have him penciled in as the day one depth chart guy that's going to be in the first team defense when they open training camp. He is guaranteed nothing. He is guaranteed to come in and compete for that position. And I think it's the same thing with the quarterback position, but it's just the way that Matt Nagy, as the head coach of this team, has to go about answering the question. To me, it would be more unfair to say Justin is our starter right now,
right,
given the fact that he has no experience. So, you know, Tim, sorry, I think the competitiveness, I think it's a positive for Justin. I think it's a positive that Andy's going to make it competitive. But ultimately, the proof is going to be in the practice pudding where they're going to be able to make the decision on the efficiency of how these quarterbacks are running the other 10 guys they're in the huddle with. But, again, it's just a starting point. And, you know, Ditka always used to sit there and say, tomorrow is promised to nobody. And he means that in a football sense that, right, look, man, you're the starter today, but I guarantee you I'll cut you tomorrow. And I've seen him do it. And so it's just kind of probably a more modern day language of the way coaches or even Matt is saying it. But it's still a threat that can happen.
Yeah, I think we got to get into it, and I also think we have to talk about this idea. You know, Matt Nagy, maybe he's saying this stuff to remind himself. Matt Nagy was very, you know, he hit a quick trigger with Trubisky last year and wanted to get to Nick Foles and wanted to run that. I'm sure he's trying to prevent himself from rushing to Justin Fields. Is Justin Fields is going to be the long-term quarterback of the Bears. Yeah. They moved up. They traded up to draft him. Andy Dalton's on a one-year deal. I don't know that we take this. We have a texter saying he's ruining the integrity of the position battle. No, he isn't.
No,
the battle's over. It's going to be Fields. It's just a question of when.
You know, if as a backup when I came to the Bears, if I thought there was no chance of me ever earning the opportunity to start for the Bears, then what am I working so hard for? Why am I living in the weight room? Why am I out there busting my butt every single day in practice, giving all I can if there's no chance of me earning that opportunity? And so the thing about it is I earned my first opportunity because Kurt Becker was injured. However, I think it's about sustainability, and we talked about it recently with you and David about Mercedes from the White Sox. It's about sustainability. It's not just about a one play, one day, one week performance. And so I think that's what that's the challenge is that Andy Dalton's going to know every single day he goes in the locker room. That's the challenge that he's going to face here.
All right, we've got to get to the pick six. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw. He is Tom Thayer on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
It's June. Does it matter if the Cubs get swept later today by the Mets?
Well, again, it's Marcus Stroman pitching for the Mets against Kyle Hendricks, so I would hope they'd have a better outing, but he's a real good pitcher. They're both good pitchers, and Stroman is doing okay for himself. He's been probably their most consistent pitcher. I don't think it's okay. I mean, I don't think it's good to get swept. You would like to see them salvage a game from the series, but as we talked about, they're still in first place. It hasn't changed where they're at in terms of the season. But, yeah, I think you need to – you know, you hate when teams are stacking losses. So feel free to win the game. And hopefully Chris Bryant is back because we didn't even mention that. They missed him yesterday for sure.
I think it matters because, you know, you want to have the same team confidence on the road that you do at home. And I don't think there's a big home field advantage in baseball like there is in crowd noise, interruptiveness in football.
Right.
So I do think is you would have to walk – you'd have to leave that stadium with a good feeling, even if it's only winning that one game. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to do it in a dominating fashion, but you can't eke by with a play at the plate in the 11th inning and walk out of there, you know, with that type of fatigue win. So I do think it would pay dividends if they could go out there and leave with confidence. And I think probably the confidence could come from Hendricks as much as it could the rest of the team.
A pick six to end the half!
If the White Sox had lost to Tampa yesterday and with it the series after, building leads of 4-0 and 7-2, would that have been the worst loss of the year? Who would you have blamed? Does it underscore the need for bullpen help for a team thought to have one of the best bullpens in baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I would have looked at it as a bad loss because it means they would have lost this game three times. When you look at the lead, and everybody had a hand in it. This is not where you're going to go into the clubhouse after the game and look at one player for dropping an easy catch in the outfield at the end of the game that allows the opponent to score the winning run. It seems like, I don't know, you know, when you get a big lead, does it, you know, hurt the adrenaline or the momentum inside the clubhouse, and then it's a foregone conclusion with a 5-run lead that, hey, let's just get this game over with so we can go home and face, you know, Houston and a equally as important opponent. So I think everybody had a hand, would have had a hand if they would have lost this. However, you think what Grandal did at the end, and they got a player across the plate, and everybody was celebrating and pouring water on your head. So, you know, they came away with a good feeling, but I think everybody would have had a hand in it, not just one person or one segment of the team.
Yeah, well, they had a man on second, right, in the ninth inning right. with no out. So right. it was the same situation an inning later. I think that it had the White Sox lost yesterday and with that lost the series to Tampa, I think that it would have been the worst loss of the year because you were up 4-0 and 7-2. And I think it would have been the worst loss of the year because of what Lucas Giolito gave you. He gave you a good enough performance to win that game. And unfortunately, that's two games in a row now where he has not gotten a win after leaving with a lead, and they ended up winning both games, so that's nice to see. But those are wins that he doesn't get credit for, and he did well enough to get both those wins. I probably would have blamed the manager, frankly. I mean, you know, we talk about Tony La Russa, and he's again playing a different game. He's making some decisions that seem fairly antiquated at different times. He's also staying with guys. He's gone back to different relievers who have struggled. And what we've seen is, you know, you struggle, Tony stays with you, you do better, and then Tony stays with you and you struggle. So now I guess he stays with them again and does better. I would have blamed the bullpen. Yes, they need another arm. They need somebody. I don't know if it's Kopech coming back. I don't know, Jace Fry. They need a right-handed guy, though, not Fry. So they do need help in the bullpen.
A pick six of 100 yards.
How surprised were you that Ryan Burr was given the ball for the 10th inning? Was that not a very high leverage spot for a reliever of his experience? Was part of you disappointed that Billy Hamilton was not in left field instead of Andrew Vaughn just for the whole Hamilton Burr thing? Did you dig his Zoom sign off?
Go Sox, baby.
Go Sox, baby. Yeah, I thought Ryan Burr was great. I was really impressed by his performance. And he had a couple of long outs to Andrew Vaughn. It would have been funny if it was Billy Hamilton and you had the Burr and Hamilton thing. I don't know if you're aware, there was a duel. It's a long story. We'll get into it at some other point. Okay, so Ryan Burr is a great story. He's had his injury and come back from it. He's been a guy that hasn't been able to pitch in a while, and he's done pretty well this year. Use him more. Let's find out more about Ryan Burr. That's one of the guys you can get to and figure out. And, you know, Tony La Russa said it very well in the postgame, which is they were ready to bring in Hendricks, and they didn't have to. And that means he's fresh going into Houston. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that was, Tony saying in the postgame about Hendricks about not having to use him, yep. making sure that he has a couple days off so he's fresher next opportunity. You know, when you talk about Ryan Burr, you can't pick and choose your opportunities to use a player. There's scenarios that you're going to face that you're going to have to put in a player, and you really don't know, you know, you really don't know what he's going to be able to do because the experiences at a major league level, it's going to be difficult anyways. But I think that's also part of the challenge to the player to start getting a value understanding of him. What situations can you put him in? Do you only want to put him in the game when you have an 8-run lead and you only need a one out? No, that's not the case anymore. So, you know, with injuries, with the season winding on, with trying to see, you know, the pitchers that you can use in these different scenarios, not disappointed. I love Billy Hamilton, though. You know, I love him. I love every chance he could play. And I was thinking when I was at the Bears practice the last couple of days, I was thinking if there's a couple players in Major League Baseball in Chicago, I would like to see Billy Hamilton as a wide receiver on the Bears. Because some of the catches he makes in the outfield, he jumps for the ball. Yeah. You know, he's tracking him down. So,
good.
You know, it would be fun to see him. What is he like? 6 foot, 180 pounds, or something. It would be fun to see him. But the Ryan Burr, hey, play him, pitch him.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
What did you make of Danny Trevathan calling Eddie Goldman a quote silent killer and saying this?
I know he's gonna be here. He's been working his tail off. He looked totally different. I've been communicating with him as much as possible. He's a tough guy to get in contact with.
Could Goldman silently be killing the Bears' season?
I'm not happy with the situation with Eddie Goldman. The Bears went out and they made a commitment to him, and they paid him a lot of money the year before the COVID. Then he opted out. And one thing you do is we talked about it the other day on Monday, that Eddie Goldman's not recovering from an injury. Eddie Goldman should be coming in here looking like Aaron Donald. He should have the body of an Adonis. He should come in here from a year spent in the weight room and on the conditioning field, coming in here ready to be the leader. Listen, if you don't want to be vocal, then set an example. I know I do like Kyrus Tonga, the guy they drafted out of BYU, and I think he's going to be an asset to this football team. But I think Danny Trevathan is the leader of this defense, and he's sending a positive message to his teammates that they need to hear. Eddie Goldman, does he need get just some positive message sent by his teammates, understanding how important his role could be with this team? Danny Trevathan at practice yesterday, he was the most enthusiastic guy out there. He was making plays. He was running around. He looked like Danny Trevathan from 5 years ago. So I guess if you want to hear the message from one of the leaders, he's the guy you want to hear it from.
Yeah, Danny Trevathan to me was just like Matt Nagy. Well, we know he's going to be here. It's a problem, and it's going to be one until it's no longer a problem. So until he gets there, then it's a problem. And the idea that you're just kind of giving your hope and dream that he's going to show up. And then you say, I've been in touch with him, as much as you can, because you can't get a hold of that guy. That's a problem, too, quite frankly. Yep. That's not like great communication. I reached out to him, but he's a tough guy to get a hold of. That is a little bit scary. Listen, I don't know that he's the silent killer of the season, but I know they're a better football team with Eddie Goldman. And I think he's a good football player. And I hope that he wants to play and that he has passion for the game and all the other things we talk about. I think it's a strange situation, and I think that all we're getting is optimism. That's not reality. So I hope it works out, but I think they're hoping that he turns up. And I don't know that Danny has any more information than Matt Nagy gave you, other than, hey, we talked to him and he's going to be here. It's still unexcused. Yeah.
Being an alumni of the Bears, yeah. I'm a fan of the Bears, but I'm also a season ticket holder. As a season ticket holder, I want to see everybody, every member of that football team that has a mandatory commitment to be there.
Absolutely.
Pick six! Wow!
Do you consider it a problem that Robert Quinn is at minicamp but unable to practice due to a lower back injury? Given that Quinn managed just 2 sacks, a career low, after getting a $70 million contract, is he as big a concern as Goldman, even if the Bears say he'll be ready for training camp?
Yeah, they said that Quinn's going to be ready for training camp. Okay, I understand that. I wish he was able to partake in practice and all the rest of it. He got a late start to the season. He was injured most of last year, I'm guessing. The 2 sacks, that was hugely disappointing. They gave the guy a ton of money, and they have invested a lot in him, and he is not going anywhere. Here's hoping. You need him. I still think their plan is to get him opposite Mac, and the two guys can feed on the quarterback. That would be the ideal. But, yeah, it's when a guy can't play – for whatever reason, I get it. Abundance of caution. It's not important. We're going to let him. He'll be here come training camp. I think, again, these are problems until they're not problems. And right now, a guy not playing is a problem.
Well, I don't care him not being at minicamp. But when Matt addresses the media after the first day of full pads, Robert Quinn better be in full pads. And he better be taking one-on-ones. He better be taking 9-on-7. He better be involved in teamwork. Because I don't want the same questions being asked to the Bears hierarchy if Robert Quinn's not in pads at that point. And then if so, tell me the root of the back injury. Tell me what type of issues that he's facing. Is it something that needs to be surgically repaired? Is it something that needs to be a part of his regular conditioning routine? Or is it an issue that has serious concern? But I think Robert Quinn, he's proven that he's a committed football player. His track record of what he's been able to accomplish already you get the understanding that he does want to be on the field. So, minicamp, don't care. Training camp, I care. And so I need to see him in shoulder pads and helmet and being exhausted at the end of the first padded practice because he was out there giving great effort.
This is Jamal Adams with a block and a pick six.
Is your interest level in the NBA playoffs up or down with all of the injuries?
Injuries I don't care about. It's more of some of the fundamental issues that I have concerns about. Listen, there's going to be injuries every time that you play a sport, whether, you know, no matter what it is. You know, fatigue presents injuries. You know, watching the end of the Philly game last night, Philly had a 20-plus point lead during the course of the game. And then when it came down to the end of the game within the last 3 or 4 minutes, when you need to be fundamentally sound about putting yourself in a position to just make give yourself a realistic opportunity at a shot, Philly was all over the place. You got Ben Simmons who can't make free throws, that's so he's awful. Not in the game.
Yeah.
But you got, and listen, man, one of my favorite guys in the league is Joel Embiid.
Yep.
And I love the guy. I love his personality. I love the way he talks to the press after the game. He's a great athlete. He's got superior size. He's enthusiastic about playing. But I just don't see this team at the 12th hour, the most serious time in the game that they're not prepared to play fundamental basketball.
I'm digging the individual performances from guys after injuries. KD with a huge game the other night. Kawhi Leonard is out, so Paul George goes off last night. I think that kind of stuff is pretty cool, and I like what I'm seeing from that, but I don't know that it's sustainable. I think I want guys back. And I think I want to see teams at full strength, and I'm not sure I'm gonna, and that's a problem for me. The other thing is, man, I've got all these games I'm taping, recording. I'm sorry for saying taping. I've got all these games from the Euros, and I'm getting backed up now trying to follow that tournament. And then I'm watching those games. I'm trying to watch the NBA, and I actually deleted 2 episodes of Inside the NBA without watching it, because I'm running out of space with all my recordings. It's just too much. I need like a week off to watch sports just to catch up. So I'm a little behind on the NBA, to be brutally honest with you. I didn't stay up with the games last night, and I'm going to have to catch up today. All right, 312-644-6767. We will get to all your calls. We're going to bring in Lamon Pope next. We're going to talk some White Sox with the Tribune beat writer. It's Mully and Hall. We have the great Tom Thayer today on Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 of the score.
At points this year, it's felt like not only is every day they're a new hero, but every inning there's a new hero. And Ryan Burr in the top of the 10th did his job magnificently.
Yes, right field, and the White Sox have the best record in Major League Baseball. Walk it off, Yes. 8-7, your final.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Haven't heard a White Sox announcer talk about Yaz that much since Hawk. All right, let's get out. I'm sorry, that was idiotic. Let's get out to talk to Lamon Pope. He, of course, the Tribune beat writer, and he joins us on the Home Run In Hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Maybe this weekend, Tom, maybe I'll grill a pizza, invite you over.
Mm.
Wouldn't that be
fun? Pizza on the grill is great.
It's phenomenal, yes. Especially Home Run In. Let's get to Lamont. Hey, Lamont, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, fellas. How are you?
Well, you're heading out, right? You're getting out to Houston. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'm at the airport right now, and hop on a plane in about 30 minutes.
Are people behaving? Are people behaving in the airport? Is it only when they get on the airplane that they misbehave?
So far, so good. All my trips, knock on wood, have had any issues. So far, so good from that department.
So tell us about the Sox. This we were talking about it this morning. It's very impressive that you can win a series against a team like Tampa. They're a very good team, and we saw them come back yesterday. But this Sox team has got a lot of that quality to them, and they are very persistent. And you look at who's playing – and maybe more specifically, who's not, and you wonder, How are they getting this done? And are we giving everyone enough credit for what they're managing to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, when we talked during spring training, if you would have said Yasmani Grandal is going to knock in Andrew Vaughn to give the Sox the best record in the major leagues on June 16th against the Tampa Bay Rays, I would have said, well, that's a very specific sentence, but I can see that happening. But if you would have said they were without, the outfield would have been Vaughn, Brian Goodwin, and Jake Lamb, and they would have been playing without Yoan Moncada and without Nick Madrigal, I would have been like, wait, what? There's a whole lot going on there. It's been really remarkable, this way that they've been able to, you know, overcome all these injuries. And everyone, you know, as they said during that segment in the lead-in, it seems like every single night or every single day, there's someone new stepping up and stepping in and making that big play and making that big moment. And it's been contributions all across the board. You know, Larry Garcia playing over at third base, making some really good plays, stepping on in for Yoan Moncada yesterday. Obviously, just contributions. All, you know, Ryan Burr coming on in the 10th inning and contributing as well. So it's just been every single night, it seems like there's a new person to write about that's stepping on in and helping this team win game after game.
You know, Lamont, you think of the role that the home run has played for the White Sox this year. Is it not relying on it too much, because you can't overemphasize, obviously, you put a run on the board every time someone hits one, but if they don't hit one, you know, how can they improve their run output if it's not relying on the home run and what it's played in terms of their record so far this season?
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And that sort of speaks to what's going to happen next, right? I mean, you know, can they get, you know, obviously the good news earlier this week for the team with Eloy Jimenez taking that first step on back. You know, he's got a long way to go still with his rehab process, but it's positive news. Yeah, there's still Rickon said yesterday that Luis Robert is trending in the right direction. So if those guys are possibly able to get on back in, you know, August or September, there's some power there. But it still sort of speaks to, will they have to go on out and try to get someone else? You know, do they need another bat that can produce a little more pop for that lineup? I kind of do think that that's going to be the case, or that they should sort of continue to sort of try to explore that, because I do think that they could use a little more length in the lineup, a little more pop in the lineup. So that's going to be something interesting just to see. You know, right now they're being able to do a little bit of things, a little bit of everything. Well, Tim Anderson's kind of, you know, he's hot again. He's setting the stage up at the top of the lineup, and everyone's sort of producing up and down the lineup. But I do believe that they're going to need a little more pop, and so it's going to be interesting just to see what the rehab assignment with both, you know, just sort of the progress with both Luis and Eloy, just to see what they can contribute, if they can contribute somewhere down the line.
He's Lamont Pope from the Chicago Tribune. And Lamont, I think, you know, the other element here is, could they use another arm in the bullpen? You know, normally if you see a team that's really serious about a World Series, they do get some bullpen help. And we thought this was going to be the best bullpen in baseball. And you know, Bummer's having some issues. Hoyer, Marshall, all those guys got bit a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I do believe that they really do need another arm there. I mean, you know, they've just been so inconsistent. They've had some really good outings. Yeah, obviously, Tuesday night, you know, Bummer comes in, and obviously Hendricks has been lights out at the end of the for the ninth inning. And then yesterday, yeah, you're exactly right. You know, Hoyer gives up a home run. Marshall, he comes on in, he gives up the run, but he's able to go on up back out there in the ninth,
right,
and extend him on in. And then Burke comes on in. You know, it was kind of surprising that it didn't go to Hendricks. LaRusso said after the game that they're only going to use Liam in that situation if it was going to be a safe situation there in the ninth inning. Which I guess I understand from that standpoint. But yeah, I do believe that, you know, right now the way that things are shaping up, something that we all talked about being one of these strengths of the ball club really hasn't been to this point. And so that's definitely an area that I believe they're going to be exploring here closer to the trade deadline.
Great stuff, Lamont. Thank you for jumping on. Have a safe flight. If you see an umpire on that flight, tell them to check the Astros for some of that gooey stuff. You know they're going to
get some,
you know,
popcorn.
They're using it. Yeah.
They'll create sticky hands.
Thanks, Lamont. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
That's Lamont Pope from the Chicago Tribune. Yeah, sometimes you see one of the umpires is sharing a flight or something. Just go up and tell him. He searched those cheaters.
Is he wearing
Listen
his blue?
Carefully. They have to wear the uniform.
With the
well,
short.
Because just in case they get hit in the face.
The short brim hat.
Because people are misbehaving on all sorts of flights. All right, we're gonna talk it over. We got Tom here. We'll get into all of it. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.